Perhaps someone could suggest that the little cowherd boys outside should herd their cows quietly. Yeah, someone could do it. Go ahead. Why not? Now, yesterday we spoke some, we gave some suggestions about chanting japa. And very, very simple and basic. But to just understand we have nothing else to do while we're here, when we're chanting japa. That alone helps so much. And then also, just try our best to hear the sound vibration of Krishna's holy name is Krishna. So it's such an indication. We can say it's an insult, therefore the tenth offense, as explained by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is pramada, meaning inattentiveness. And we have this experience, if we're sincerely trying to listen to what someone is saying or talking to someone, and they're going like this, and they're going like this, and they're touching this, and they're looking at what time it is, and taking out their mobile phones, and so we feel, why bother having, it's so insulting, why bother have a conversation with this person who's not even really there? Their body may be there, but they are not there. Maybe the volume could be a little bit lower. Hello, how are you all, Prabhu? So similarly, if we wish to be in relationship with Krishna, we have to do our part. Sometimes we're thinking, why isn't Krishna there? But that's usually Atmavan Manyate Jagat. That's our mind telling us that we're the ones who are not there. So let in every relationship, there's two parts. There's our part and the other person's part. And usually, when there's strife in a relationship, it's because, or very often, it's that where our mind is on the other person's part and what they're not doing properly. But rather, we should keep our mind on what our part of the relationship is and leave Krishna's part, this is who we're speaking about right now, Krishna's part to Krishna. So if we think he is not there, usually that's such a good indication that we should be there. We should sincerely be there, attentively be there with Krishna. And then, as the mind tends to do when it is unfocused, it wanders. Don't worry about it. Just bring it back. Bring it back to chanting and hearing. And ultimately, bring it back to calling out to Krishna, that Krishna, I am yours, I am your servant. I am yours, I am your servant. So, this was, and I take shelter of you. Krishna Eka Sharanam. Krishna Eka Sharanam. And this is what we saw or heard about yesterday in the pastime. The Leela, the dramatic Leela of Krishna's killing of Arista, Aristasura, who represents non-devotional so-called religions. Because non-devotional religions, impersonalism, etc., ultimately they're trying to kill Krishna, the person. They're trying to remove Krishna. Remove Krishna, the center of existence. They want the light, but they don't want the sun to be there. The son of Yashoda Maya. They don't want Krishna to be there. So they tried to remove him. And Aristasura, on behalf of Kamsa, tried to remove Krishna. And he was a willing participant in this. He tried to kill Krishna. The image sticks in my mind of him putting his head down with his sharp pointed horns aimed at Krishna. He had killed cows. He had killed sages, and now he wanted to kill Krishna. And with his bloodshot eyes staring at Krishna with such anger, he charged Krishna, pointing his horns at him. And Krishna just threw him so far away. Threw him and his stool and urine-covered body so far away. And ultimately, with his own horn, Krishna crushed him. But at that time, or prior to that time, where Krishna stood before Aristasura, before he attacked, and what called him there, which in one sense was really the central point, because these classes are called attracting the attention of Krishna. What did the Brijbasis do that so much attracted Krishna's attention? Where was he prior to this? Does anyone remember? Where was he prior to him? He was engaged in the rasa dance at Govardhan with the dear beloved gopis. And he left that. He left the rasa dance to protect those devotees in Braja who were calling out to him with such fear and having no other shelter other than him. They were calling out to him, Krishna, Krishna. And Krishna's reply was, Ma Bhayishta, which is the command form. Don't be afraid. I am here. I will protect you. You have taken shelter of me. You have given everything to me. There is no duality in your life. There is not my religion, my devotion to you. And here's the rest of my life. Your life, your energy, everything is simply devoted to me. And now, you are in some difficulty, you perceive yourself in difficulty, and you're calling out to me. Immediately, Krishna was there challenging this Aristasura, saying, why are you doing this, you rascal? You dare to do this, O Manda, Asatama? You are not a bull. You are wicked. But they took complete shelter of him. And that taking complete shelter of Krishna is really the beginning or the essence of bhakti in its surrender. This is Sharanagati in its essence. This is the Anga. Gotripte Varanam Tata. All the other parts of surrender are parts of this one, looking only to Krishna for protection. He is the one. And as His Holiness Satchananda Swami was mentioning this morning, how the mind, and I watch my mind when there is difficulty. So often, the last place my mind wants to take shelter is of Krishna. It wants to run in the exact opposite direction. It wants to point fingers at everyone else. It wants to blame. It's angry at Krishna often. So this rascal mind, as we hear from the Ivanti Brahmana in the 11th canto, that there is actually only one cause of distress. And in the same way, there is only one cure for distress. The cause is the rascal mind. And the cure is etansa astaya paratmanishtam. To cross over this uncrossable ocean of material suffering, we have to cross over something that's uncrossable. It's so fraught with dangers that makes it practically uncrossable. And they come every day. So the cause of the suffering, the cause of our material existence, manasashtanindriyani, is basically the mind, which houses the false ego. And if this mind can somehow, my mind, can somehow take shelter of Krishna, then all problems solve, because Krishna is this is what religion means. So the bull was false religion, and the Brijbasis were real religion, representing the real religionists, showing by the topmost example that Krishna was their shelter. And in today's presentation, well, there's another principle that we'll see from one lila. There'll be two important principles given. But now we have just about 10 minutes. Why don't we just chant? And even though my rascal mind will tend to find so many other things to do, I have nothing other to do right now other than to chant Krishna's names, to be there with Krishna as a servant, asking him to please accept me as his servant and take shelter of him in the form of his holy names. So be determined to do this. Without determination, nothing happens. Determination to apply the principles that we learn. Without determination, nothing happens. And without trying, nothing happens. So try. Please take shelter of Guru, Vaishnava, Srila Prabhupada, Sisi Gornatai, Pancha Tattva, Sisi Radha Govinda, and Giriraj, who is just behind this wall. Just try your best. And just chant on as higher level as you can, meaning if you can chant with full love, do that. If you can just hear one name of Krishna, you are so fortunate. Just try your best, but try. Okay. Slowly, slowly, we stop now. Stop the chanting for a different kind of chanting. Attracting the attention of Krishna. This is, if we could have Krishna's glance somehow fall upon us in a very merciful way, his glance must be merciful, he's absolute, then we have all fortune. This is what we desire. So we just heard about Krishna Krishna Tite Sarvam yesterday's class. Govinda Saranam Yuyu. That all the Brijbasis, they called out to Krishna. Krishna, Krishna. And then in that calling, there weren't two things. There was one thing. They took shelter of Krishna. But their mood colored their chanting, their calling out, their kirtan. So this presentation is called The Power of Absorption. And it's just a continuation of the lila after the killing of Aristasura, but something I would like to talk about that prefaces this. Now here, Parikshit Maharaj, this is from the first chapter of the seventh canto. Parikshit Maharaj inquires from Sukadeva Goswami because he's heard the sixth canto and he's heard how Krishna always takes the side of the demigods, and helps the demigods destroy the demons. So Maharaj Parikshit asks, "My dear Brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, being everyone's well-wisher, he's the Supreme Lord, is equal and extremely dear to everyone. How then did he become partial like a common man for the sake of Indra, and thus killed Indra's enemies. How can a person equal to everyone be partial to some and inimical towards others? It appears that the Supreme Lord takes the side of the godly over the asuric, but he creates both. He is the father of everyone. So, in Prabhupada's words, this appears to be a childish mentality. So, Sukadeva Goswami replies, and in his reply, he recounts the response of Narada Muni to a similar inquiry from Maharaj Yudhisthira. Formerly, O king, these are the words of Sukadeva, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, the great sage Narada responded to his inquiry reciting historical facts, showing how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always impartial, even when killing demons. In this regard, he gave an example. And the example was, took place during the Rajasuya sacrifice when Shishupal was killed by Krishna. His head was severed from his body by Krishna's Sudarshan Chakra in the middle of the Rajasuya sacrifice. Sisupal had a plan. He criticized Krishna. How are you giving the primary worship to this cowherd boy who did this? And he criticized Krishna so many times. But he was a politician, and he was trying to disrupt the entire Rajasuya sacrifice. He wanted blood to be spilled in the sacrificial arena, and that would nullify the whole sacrifice, and therefore Yudhisthira would not be crowned as the emperor, the samrat. So he was doing this very calculatingly, and Krishna just tolerated as per his previous promise. And then at a certain point, after so many insults had been hurled at Krishna, Krishna cut off his head. And then Yudhisthira, with his own eyes, he saw the soul come out of Shishupal's body. And before his eyes, usually these things are not visible, but by Krishna's grace, it was visible. He saw that soul enter Krishna's body. So Yudhisthira inquired, how is this possible that this demon got this type of liberation? He entered the body, the soul entered the body of the Supreme Lord. Yogis and tapasis, this is the focus of their attempt to do this. And then this demon, asura, he gained it. Now the verses that Narada Muni describes here are actually given by, he will speak some verses here describing the potency of absorption in Krishna. And these verses are quoted by Srila Jiva Goswami in the Bhakti Sandarbha to describe the most potent form of bhakti, spontaneous bhakti, spontaneous attraction, the path of raga, ragmar. So these are the verses that he quotes. Kama dveshad bayat sneha, either by kam, by intense desire, like in the example will be given of the gopis, or dveshad, or even enmity, bayat, fear, sneha, affection, yata bhaktyeshvare mana, or just bhakti within the mind. But avesha, if the absorption, taragam hitwa, giving up all sinful activities, agam, bahavas tad gatim gata. What a nice sound. Bahavas tad gatim gata. That so many people, by this type of absorption, regardless of the cause of their absorption, kama, dvesha, bayat, sneha, or bhakti, the power of absorption in Krishna causes people to gain the supreme goal, the supreme destination. And there I am, chanting my japa, and it's my japa. It doesn't have anything to do with Krishna. There is no absorption. Krishna's not really there for me most of the time. Not in relationship with Krishna. I'm just chanting my rounds, not calling out to Krishna. What to speak of actually being absorbed, my thoughts, my consciousness being absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, even by the simple way of hearing the mantra, or Krishna, I am yours. What to speak of love for Krishna, Sudanam. So here the glorification, the potency, is ascribed to the absorption. Many, many persons, here's the translation, have attained liberation simply by thinking of Krishna with great attention and giving up sinful activities. This thinking of Krishna, that great attention, this great attention may be due to lusty desires, inimical feelings, fear, affection, devotional service. And now I shall explain how one receives Krishna's mercy simply by concentrating one's mind upon him. And in the next verse, Sri Narada Muni is going to explain examples of each of these. Gopya kamad, the gopis through their kam. Of course, the kam of the gopis is, I say of course because we feel dutiful that we have to say of course. It is not like the kam, the lust of this world. So that word, it is completely transcendental. We say it is transcendental, but what does that mean? And especially what does it mean in my mind when I have not so much or no experience of transcendental? So it means that there is no trace of kamendriya priti. There is no selfishness. There is krishnendriya. It is for Krishna's pleasure. And this is the special characteristic of all the Brajbasis, but at the topmost point of this is the Brajagopis. Their thoughts are only for Krishna. Mother Yashoda would give up her life thousands of times, millions of times, die willingly, happily, jump into the fire to save Krishna from one drop of perspiration, some inconvenience. She's ready to give up everything. The gopis are crying when Krishna leaves them, and their thought is that his tender, soft, lotus-like, pinkish feet, which are so fragrant and soft and beautiful, are going to be hurt by the ankur, the sprouts, when he's wandering in the forest. This is their concern. So Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj, he explains this, that regardless of what's going on in Braja, regardless, he specifically uses the example of the gopis, regardless of what they're doing, they're looking in the mirror, and when we look in the mirror, some of us remember when we used to be combing our hair so many years ago. But it's self-absorption. And I'm the center. And that defines kam. And krishnendriya priti, the desire, vansha, this is premanam. This is what is called prema. When the senses are absorbed, the mind, the consciousness is absorbed in satisfying Krishna. And that's the kind of calm. But it's the point here is full absorption. That was quite a leap. It was more than a leap of faith even. So the gopis are the example of calm. They were absorbed. And who is the example of bhaya or fear? It is Kamsa. From the moment he heard that the eighth child in the womb of Devaki will be the cause of your death. He was fearful, and he immediately pulled out his sword at that time. He was going to kill his own sister to save his own life, he thought. He was ready to do anything. This is the demonic mentality. The gopis were ready to do anything for Krishna's pleasure. The residents of Vrindavan, again, Mother Yashoda, when she couldn't see Krishna for a moment, she would cry like a cow bereft of the calf. Just how much love this is. How can someone who is empty of love be able to calculate it? How many multiplications of zero comes to something like, comes to any tangible, substantial number? So the residents of Vrindavan have a love that is so full and so complete, and their consciousness is constantly fully and only absorbed in Krishna. This is Braja Bhakti, Prema Bhakti, in the mood of Braja. And Kamsa is included in the same category here, but not with love, but false ego, demonic consciousness. Why? Out of his fear, his absorption is so complete. We'll be speaking about this. Envy, dvesha, Chadyadayo, Shishupal, the king of Chedi, O King Ripa, Sambandad Vrishni, the Vrishnis, due to their relationship of Krishna as our family member, and Snehad Duyam, the devotees like you who have such affection for him, Maharaj Yudhisthira, and Bhakta Vayam, like ourselves, Narada Muni says, by our bhakti, all power, we worship the Lord. So here is the translation. My dear King Yudhisthira, the gopis by their lusty desires, Kamsa by his fear, Shishupal and other kings by envy, the Yarus by their familial relationship with Krishna, and you, the Pandavas, by your great affection for Krishna, and we, the general devotees, by our devotional service, have attained the mercy of Krishna. So the point that is being made here is this point about absorption. So we are going to now hear about the absorption of Kamsa. Now his example is to be followed only from the point of his absorption. We should not become pratikulena Krishna anusilanam, but it's anukulena Krishna anusilanam. We should be absorbed in thoughts of how to please Krishna. This is our goal. One way of achieving this goal is vaidhi, because we know we're supposed to do it, we do it. The other way is it's spontaneous. And when the vaidhi is used in the service of the spontaneous, as described by Srila Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Sandarbha, that is also an aspect of spontaneous ragmarg. And that is the path that we have been taught following the line of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We follow vaidhi. We must have the channels of the vidhi, of the rules and regulations, to support our attempt of spontaneity towards Krishna. And gradually, if we practice our Krishna consciousness properly, then the spontaneity, it grows, it flows, we become attracted to Krishna. But the essence of that's being described here is the absorption. And this point is something extremely important for our japa, because we want to become absorbed in thinking of that person, Krishna, and the relationship with Krishna. That if we call out to him, Krishna, Krishneti te sarvam, Govinda saranam yoyu. If we call out to him, oh Krishna, I am yours, I'm surrendered to you. I'm sheltered by you. I have no other shelter. Then immediately he's there. If our prayers are deep and coming from the real me, the soul, immediately there is response if Krishna so desires. And we could say then if there is no response, that's Krishna's response. Seemingly no response. So as we continue after the killing of Aristasura, first I should describe something about the history of Kamsa. Who is Kamsa? We know that who is Kamsa? He's the king Kamsa. He's a demon. He's an asura. He's the son of Ugrasena, but not actually the son of Ugrasena. He is the son of, there was a demon after Ugrasena was just married, his wife whose name was, but a different wife perhaps. Perhaps a different wife perhaps. But she went to her family's home and there a servant who was a demon, an asura named Dramila, became attracted to her. And she, that demon, asura, disguised himself to look just like Ugrasena. And as a result of this demonic combination, then Kamsa was born. So he was not actually the son of Ugrasena. And this wasn't the first time he was a demon. For birth after birth, he was a demon. He took part in Ram Lila, as Ravana's uncle, and he tried to stop Hanuman from bringing back the Gandhamandana mountain with the herbs to cure Lakshmana. And in Krishna's Lila, he was the demon. He was the son of Hiranyakashipu named Kalanemi, and Krishna. He attacked Krishna when Krishna or Vishnu, when he was protecting, Krishna was taking the side of the demigods after the churning of the ocean of milk, and he attacked Lord Vishnu violently with his trident, and Lord Vishnu was on a Garuda, and he caught that trident and he killed this Kalanemi immediately. So Kalanemi died thinking of revenge and wanting to kill Lord Vishnu. And then Sukracharya brought all the demons back to life, including Kalanemi. And then Kalanemi performed austerities, following in the footsteps of Hiranyakashipu. He tried to please Lord Brahma for 100 celestial years. He performed austerities, and he too lost all the flesh from his body in his austerities. And finally Lord Brahma came and he asked, I want to be undefeatable from the demigods. And Lord Brahma benedicted him. This is difficult, but I give this to you. And then he was so powerful. And in his next birth is Kamsa, the son of Dramila and Ugrasena's wife. He had that power and that demoniac mentality and that enmity with Vishnu. And with that power as Kamsa, he began to make war. Before he began to make war on the demigods, he began to get his allies together. So he fought. He went to the sons of the king of Bahishmati, who were Chanura, Mastika, Sala, Toshala, and Kuta, and he walked over to them, so powerful, and he said, I will challenge you to fight. And if you defeat me, I will be your servant. But if I defeat you, you will be my servant. And he defeated each and every one of them, and they became servants of Kamsa. And then he fought with Pralambasura, he fought with this one, he fought with that one, and he made alliances, he fought with Narakasura, Dvidvid, and he was so powerful by the blessing of Brahma, he defeated everyone and made everyone his servant and his ally. And once Jarasandha, he was conquering the world, practically speaking, and he was by the Yamuna, and he had a powerful elephant whose name was Kuvalayapita, who was so powerful he escaped from the camp, and he came to where Kamsa was, and Kamsa picked this elephant up and threw him 80 miles, and landing back with Jarasandha, and Jarasandha being a powerful demon himself, religious but demonic, he said, this Kamsa is very powerful. I want him as my son-in-law. So he gave his two daughters, Asti and Prapti, to Kamsa as his wives. And it wasn't these wives. Yeah, anyway. And they end up lamenting at the end. And he also gave Kuvalayapita, that elephant, to Kamsa. And then, and this point comes up later, then Kamsa, with all his pride, he wanted more benedictions. So he went to the Mount Mahendra and he lifted this mountain up and held it in the sky and put it down. And Pasaram was there. He lifted up again 10 times. He lifted up a mountain and put it down until Pasaram, his attention was attracted. And Pasaram said, you wicked Kshatriya, because Pasaram was the enemy of Kshatriyas, you wicked Kshatriya, you are like a small crab, a mosquito, I'm going to kill you. And he said, Kamsa said, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm a demon. I was born from an Asura. Pasaram said, this bow over here, and this comes up later in the Dhanurjagya, this bow over here was given to me by Lord Shiva. And that bow was given to Lord Shiva by Lord Vishnu. When Lord Shiva was going to destroy the Tripura, the Triparari, he became known as Triparari for destroying the city of the demons who were attacking. If you string it, I will give it to you. And if you fail to do so, it was huge. It will take away all your strength. Kamsa picked it up. He strung it 10 times, 20 times. And he made such a loud, thunderous sound when he released the string. And Pasaram was appreciative. And Kamsa said, I am just your servant. I am the most fallen servant of you. And Pasaram's heart melted and gave him that bow with one warning attached. He said, whoever breaks this bow will kill you. So later, soon we'll hear how the Dhanurjagya takes place. And when Krishna enters Mathura, it's such a scene. Because everyone knows. Everyone is afraid of Kamsa. And everyone knows that the son of Vasudev has come. The prince has returned to retake the kingdom. And everyone is worshipping him. Seeing Krishna, no one has any fear of Kamsa. Usually they're all so afraid of Kamsa. But seeing this beautiful Krishna with his sapphire effulgence, so strong, so confident, so beautiful. This is the 41st chapter of the 10th canto. And then Krishna walks into the arena. And the bow is there, surrounded by guards. And they say, you cannot enter. Krishna pushes them away. He picks up the bow and cracks it. And Kamsa hears that crack. And he knows his death has entered the city. But let us now move forward, and then we will move to that point perhaps again. So, in one or two verses, with no explanation, we hear, just after the killing of Aristasura, Narada Muni visits King Kamsa. And this is what he says. Yashodaya Sutam Kanya. That child that everyone thinks was the male child of Yashoda, everyone thinks that it's Yashoda Nandana. It was actually that girl who you later tried to kill and you found out was Durga. He says this directly to Kamsa. And Devakya Krishnamivacha. And Devaki, the eighth child of Devaki, was actually Krishna. Evacha, certainly. And not only that, Ramam cha Rohini putram. What Rama, who is Rohini's putra, son, Vasudevena bibhyata, out of fear. He's so weak, out of fear. Vasudev had brought these two across the river and made the exchange. He cheated you. He had promised you that each of his children, as they would be born one after the other, would be brought to you and you could kill them as you like to spare Devaki. He cheated you and brought that male child, Krishna, across the river and exchanged it for the female child of Yashoda. Nyasto Swamitra, he gave them to his friend, his dear friend, his own friend. But Nyasto means he placed them there, or he lent them, he brought them temporarily to his friend's place in Gokul, Nanda Maharaj. And it is these two. He brought them, he lent them, meaning it's time for them to come back. And it is these two, Yabhyam Te Purusha, your men, it is these two who has killed all your people that you have sent. He cheated you. Yashoda's child was actually a daughter, and Krishna is the son of Devaki. Also, Rama is the son of Rohini. Out of fear, Vasudeva entrusted Krishna and Balaram to his friend Nanda Maharaj. And it is these two boys who have killed your men. Upon hearing this, the master of the Bhojas, Bhojapati, Kamsa, became furious. I've been cheated. And he lost control of his senses. Kopat, chalite, his senses were moving here and there. His indriya were moving here and there in his anger. And immediately, Narada Muni had spoken to him in a private place. Immediately, even though Vasudeva wasn't there, he pulled out his sword to kill Vasudeva. Vasudeva Jaghamsaya. And Nivaritu Naradena Tatsutao Mrityumatmana Gyatva. So he said, he stopped him, Narada, Nivarito, he checked him. He stopped him from killing Vasudeva. Tatsuto Mrityum. Just look what he said. These two, and he's including Balaram in this, because he wants Krishna and Balaram. Narada wants Krishna and Balaram to come to Mathura. It is now time for Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes to end and his Mathura pastimes to begin. And Narada has this service to do. Narada Muni is born directly out of the mind. He's directly born out of the mind of the Supreme Lord. And he is the potency. He carries Krishna's bhakti shakti with him. This is what he is. He's Krishna's bhakti. So there is no enmity in his doing this at all. But this is what has to happen. It is Krishna's desire. Although Krishna, when he's in Vrindavan, this is the last thing he desires. But yet, it has to happen. We shall speak about this tomorrow. So, this Vasudeva, out of fear, this he already told him, he's weakly, why kill him? Because Tatsutom Rityumatmana, these two boys are the cause of your death. He's telling them that they're going to kill you. And he will start exhibiting his demonic mentality, of course. Gyatva, knowing that he took him, he took Vasudeva, he put away his sword, but he was afraid. We'll speak about why he was afraid. Gyatva loha maya pasha, loha maya with shackles made out of iron. Bandava sahabharya, he bound up Vasudeva and his bharya, his wife, Devaki. He was so cruel. Even he put his wife in iron shackles at this time. Here's the translation. But Narada restrained Kamsa by reminding him that it was the two sons of Vasudeva who would cause his death. He's telling him, you can't stop your death here. They're going to kill you. But his mind was so focused in this demonic tendency to want to control, this focused intensity on himself, that he could not see what was directly in front of his eyes, just as we cannot see what is directly in front of our eyes a lot of the time. So Kamsa then had Vasudeva and his wife shackled in iron chains. So with these two verses, this is the end of Narada's speaking to Kamsa. And then Kamsa starts his planning. I think now we can open up the doors because there can be more air in, and also it will be it's not so dark, not so light outside. Please open up the doors all the way, please. Now, Kamsa hears this, and he's fearful. Fear, bhayat Kamsa. He becomes so absorbed in the thought that he's going to die, he makes but the hands of Krishna or Krishna and Balaram, he starts his atheistical plan making to somehow avert the inevitable. So there are two points that we want to watch here in what I would like to bring to your attention. One is that this is the demonic tendency. There's plan making with myself at the center. And it takes intelligence to make these plans. And intelligence, as described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, it is born of false ego in the mode of passion. In contact with false ego, in contact with the mode of passion. So the mind starts, the mind based on false ego, starts this plan making with myself in the center, how to get what I want for me. Ishwaraham. I am the one who can control. And why do I need to control? Aham bogi, so I can enjoy. Siddaham. Aham suki. I will make myself so happy because I deserve it. This is false ego. It immediately puts us in opposition to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because we're imagining ourselves as the center. So Kamsa begins. First, he calls for Keshi. Now, previously, Keshi and Arista had come, and Kamsa had sent Arista first and told Keshi to wait nearby. After Arista had been killed, Kamsa became depressed. And for 1 year, Srila Jiva Goswami describes, he did not send anyone to Braja. And then when he heard this from Narada Muni, his fear increased even more that his depression lifted. So he went into action. And that action had him call for Keshi. And when he called Keshi at first, Keshi said to him, "Why make enemies unnecessarily?" In other words, he was feeling some trepidation. After all, Krishna has killed Arista. But Keshi himself was, he's compared to the prana, the life of Kamsa. Kamsa's own life, and he was the most powerful of all of Kamsa's allies. So he called for him, and he said, King Kamsa summoned Keshi and ordered him, go kill Rama and Krishna. But look at the Sanskrit here. Bhavata Rama Keshavo. You kill these two. Plural tense. But what name does he calls him Keshava. And what does Keshava mean? It means the boy with the beautiful hair, but it also means the one who has killed the Keshi demon. go and meet the person who is going to kill you and save you. When Krishna kills someone, he's saved. And this is the equality of Krishna because the ones who Krishna kills are liberated. He is, everything he does is beneficial for everyone. Now, Kamsa engaged his diplomatic potencies and he was already so strong. But no matter how strong one is, and this is, or how wealthy one is, or how powerful one is, or has any great opulence, at the core of one's heart, one is afraid because it is based on false ego. So everyone ultimately, bhayam dviti abhinavesha tasya rishad apetasya vipariyato smati, because we are upside down, thinking ourselves the center based on false ego. Therefore, the first result is that is dvitiya. We see good and bad in a materialistic way. And bhayam, fear comes to the heart. This is the essential foundational element of materialistic consciousness. It is fear-based. And Kamsa, for all his power, and he's called Bhojapati before, he's afraid. So 2 points again. One, we see the glory of Kamsa is his absorption, abhinaveshata. The word the same use, absorption in Krishna. And this absorption in Krishna is so powerful. And thoughts of Krishna is so powerful that he's used as an example that we should follow. We have to split this one in half. Not the demonic element of Kamsa, but his absorption. And Sri Narada Muni is holding us for us to see. And this principle, again, we want to try and bring into our chanting of Krishna's names, both in japa and in kirtan. That's the practical point, the power of absorption. But the other point that Kamsa is going to exhibit is the demonic point, the point of the competitive point with Krishna, the planning, scheming point to make myself in the center, even when I'm performing devotional service. What's in it for me, my so-called devotional service? What's in it for me? Everything that passes through my hands, there must be at least some percentage for me. Everyone must at least know that I've given a good class or something, or at least something. But this type of mentality will not bring us to Vrindavan, because the residents of Vrindavan don't have the slightest trace of any false ego. No false ego allowed. The door to Vrindavan is small enough for a spirit soul to get through, but it is not big enough for a false ego to fit through. So this is the quality that we want, that we have to see, has some place. It's not what we have to see, but every conditioned soul, it is very good if we see that there's a little Kamsa inside that sometimes gets out of his cage and exhibits demonic selfishness, self-centeredness, selfishness. And when we come to grips, and this comes a part of us, it inhibits our fully taking shelter of Krishna, because that there's enmity with Krishna. Why should I take shelter of Krishna? Everyone should know about me. After all, I'm me. An insignificant spirit soul, but we forget that part. Or even if we think our bodies, if we think this body is me, it's so insignificant that in 100 years from now or 50 years from now, probably no one will even know that any of us existed ever. And yet I'm considering the Kamsa inside is thinking of myself as so central to the existence, and somehow the world does go on without us. So because we have this falsity is there in false ego, therefore we're always afraid, and we're afraid of other people because we're confronted with people who know more than us, who are stronger than us, who are wealthier than us, and then we're exposed as being what we are, tiny and insignificant. So when we come to grips with this, when we recognize this, what to do? First point is recognize it, and then We have to become humble, and then only with some humility, understanding that yes, this is alive in me, then I can chant with some actual Govindam Sharanam Yayu. I can take shelter because I need shelter. I can't take shelter unless I actually feel the crying urgent need for shelter, and unless I want to gain something on the spiritual level, there won't be any need for taking shelter. So there's a desire that must come to be with Krishna, and the consciousness must come that I'm not with Krishna now, and for good reason, I'm not with Krishna because I don't Govinda Sharanam. I don't have that. I don't have love for Krishna. So that's the other side that comes out too. So keep both in mind. Look at his absorption. It's glorious. But it's in enmity. So first he sent Keshi away. But he actually, even though he was so powerful, he didn't have any faith that Keshi would come back alive, having killed Krishna. And therefore, more of his plans were revealed. The king of the Bhojas next called for his ministers, headed by Mushtika, Chanora. These were the people who were his servants, trusted servants, now his ministers, Sala, Toshala, and also for his elephant keepers. And the king addressed them as follows. He said, because he was very expert at controlling and manipulating, and he knew even this is the demonic mentality. I could be very, very, very sweet on the outside for my own selfish, Kamsa-like purposes. My dear, heroic Chanura and Mustika, please hear this. Rama and Krishna, the sons, not the sons of Nanda Maharaj, the sons of Anaka, Dundubi, Vasudev, are living in Nanda's cowherd village. It has been predicted that these two boys will be the cause of my death. And when they are brought here, kill them on the pretext of engaging them in a wrestling match. Chanura, Mustika, Sala, Toshala, Kuta, as stronger than elephants, powerful, and these delicate, sweet boys. Kill them in the wrestling match. Erect a wrestling ring with many surrounding viewing stands, because we have to make a pretext to bring them here, because this is going to be the issue that he's going to finally solve. We'll make our great plan to kill Krishna and Balaram, but how will I get them here from beloved Braja to Mathura? Erect a wrestling ring with many surrounding stands and bring all the residents of Mathura, all the residents of the city and the outlying districts to see the open competition of wrestling. Everyone enjoys these type of festivals and fairs. Bring them. Bring everyone. Don't just bring Krishna and Balaram, because then they will know something is going on suspiciously. But invite everyone to come. All the outlying districts. And you, elephant keeper, my good man, you should position the elephant Kuvalaya Pita at the entrance to the wrestling arena and have him kill my two enemies. Now, we hear from the Acharyas that Kamsa was so clever to cover up his actual intention, his plan, that he was going to ride the elephant. He would ride it. And then when they get to the door of the arena, he would dismount from the elephant and he would walk through, and the elephant, who could not fit through the door, would have the perfect reason to be there to guard the door, and Krishna and Balaram would have to walk through that door, and at that time the elephant could grab him. Hasti means hot hand, and this is the elephant's hand, his trunk. He would grab him and throw him on the ground, crush him with his feet, the most powerful elephant. So have him at the entrance to the wrestling arena and have him kill my two enemies. Commence the bow sacrifice. Now this, Narada came on the Ekadasi. So on the Chaturdasi, you begin the bow sacrifice. So this is the grand excuse. We're going to hold a bow sacrifice to this Dhanur, this bow, Dhanur Jagya, that Lord Shiva had given to Parsaram, and Parsaram had given to me. We will worship this bow. And everyone should come to take part in this auspicious worshiping. And we will also have a wrestling competition here, just to keep everyone in a joyous spirit in the festival. So commence the Bov sacrifice and the Chaturdasi day in accordance with the relative, with the relevant Vedic injunctions, and in ritual slaughter, offer the appropriate kinds of animals to the very magnanimous, generous Lord Shiva, who fulfill our desires to have Krishna and Balaram killed. Demonic plan making. He even knows he's going to die. He even knows it's going to happen. But he cannot allow that thought to blossom in his consciousness, like every demonic, false ego driven person. They're living and living and living as if they're going to live forever, but everyone knows what Kamsa knows. Kalos min lokachaya krit, by Krishna, by the Supreme Lord, by the power of time, our death is approaching. What will we accomplish? Who will remember us? Of course, for devotees, we can do something eternal. We can do something with our lives that we have forever. We can make offerings to Krishna. And this is the Kamsa is meditating how to save his life, which is impossible, and therefore he's always fearful. And the devotee meditates how to please Krishna. His relationship with Krishna is strong. Having commanded his ministers, Kamsa next called for a crew. Now this is very mysterious what goes on here. I find it very mysterious. He's the most eminent of the Yadus. And Kamsa knew the art of securing personal advantage. Arta Tantra Gya. He knew this. And thus, Akura, who was a Yadava, but and all the Yadavas had ran away because Kamsa was killing them. He was a Rakshasa. But Akura remained with a few others because he knew that Krishna was going to come back. And when Kamsa, and actually some acharyas say that these plans that Kamsa made, they were including putting Vasudeva and Devaki in prison in iron shackles. They were all came by subtle thoughts planted in the mind of Kamsa by Narada Muni. You put don't kill them, but put them in shackles. Because when Krishna hears, if he had heard that Vasudeva, if he even had heard that you had pulled out your sword to kill Vasudeva, Nanda Maharaj would hear about this, because you know how news travels. We all know this in ISKCON. Then immediately, Nanda Maharaj would become fearful and he would hide. And he would hide Krishna, and he would hide Balaram, and how will we find them? And this is their territory. Let us instead, why don't you bring Krishna and Balaram here? This is your territory. And Vishwanath says, even Srila Vishwanath Chakravartitya says, even a dog in his own territory can frighten off a lion. So he spoke this way. So, and Akura knew. So if Krishna Balaram knew that his father and mother were in shackles, he has to come, and then you can have him killed. So Akura knew that Krishna had to come. And even though Krishna was so close in Vrindavan, he never could go to see him, because of fear of Kamsa. And now, as we will hear directly later, he's thinking, when he hears Kamsa's plan, which will happen soon, but first he took Akura by his hand and he spoke to him as follows. My dear Akura, O most charitable one, please do me a friendly... He was his minister, his chief minister, practically speaking. Please do me a friendly favor out of respect. Amongst the Bhojas and Vrishnis, there is no one else as kind to us as you. I have no better friend here in Mathura amongst the whole Yadu dynasty than you. I trust you completely. Gentle Akura, he was very intelligent. You always carry out your duties very soberly, and therefore you'll know how to carry out the very delicate act that I'm going to request you of you to bring Krishna and Balaram here. And I am depending on you. Now understand this example he's given. Just as powerful Indra took shelter of Lord Vishnu, Kamsa's the king, and in this example, he is Indra. So as powerful Indra, as powerful King Kamsa, I am taking shelter of you, just as Indra sometimes for the killing or to remove Bali Maharaj takes shelter of Vamandev. So in the example, Kamsa is more powerful than Akrura, and who is he considering more powerful than Lord Vishnu? Indra. He was officially a demon. Oh, to achieve his goals, he did that. So now, please go to Nanda's village where the two sons of Anakadundubi, they are the sons of Vasudev, they are your relatives, bring them. They are living there, and without delay, go immediately and bring them here on this chariot. And he points to a new chariot that had been made. And when Akrura heard this plan, he was so happy. Because of Kamsa, he was frightened to go. And now, because of Kamsa, he was going to be able, he's being ordered to go to Krishna. Oh. Because of Kamsa, he was being ordered to go to Krishna. And he thought, a new chariot. If Kamsa had given me his old chariot, his used chariot, I'm going to offer Kamsa Prasad to Krishna to get on. I could not do it. So when he saw the new chariot, Kamsa's mood was, they're village boys. Just like if you give one of the village boys a BMW to ride around in. Wow. Give them, let them, tell them they're now going to see a city with big buildings. They're village boys. They'll see the city and they'll travel on this new chariot. They'll surely get on. So bring them here immediately without delay. And now, he does something that bewildered me for a very long time. But not yet. The demigods who are under the protection of Vishnu had sent these two boys as my death. He does not understand they are the Supreme Lord. He thinks them like demigods. Bring them here. And also have Nanda and the other cowherd men come with gifts of tribute. We're having a big festival. If you ask them to bring the gifts, the ghee, the butter, they'll accept that we're having a festival. This is what we always do when we have festivals. After you bring Krishna and Balaram, I will have them killed by my elephant, who is as powerful as death itself. And if by chance they escape from him, I will have them killed by my wrestlers, who is as strong as lightning. This confused me. He's made this elaborate plan, and now he's telling what that plan is to Akrura. Now that doesn't seem like wise Rajniti diplomacy And actually, it isn't. But he trusts Sakura. But as Aristasura became, his mind became so filled with anger that the words just poured from his mouth without thinking of what the, you know how when we're really upset, sometimes just whatever is inside just starts coming outside. Well, Kamsa was so full of fear. His consciousness, even though his intelligence was working in this way, fear had taken over his consciousness so much that his very plans were coming out of his mouth. Things that perhaps shouldn't be spoken were just coming out of his mouth. Just before I left, I wanted to check this bewildering point, so I asked His Holiness Radhagovinda Maharaj, and he said yes. I mentioned both these points. He trusted Akura, but it's out of fear that it was just coming from his mouth. His consciousness was so disturbed. He said yes, out of fear. I will have them killed by my wrestlers. And then the rest of his plan comes out. And after they have been killed, I will kill Vasudeva. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that why doesn't he kill these people first? And it is because after I kill Krishna, I will have the pleasure of watching his relatives suffering and lamenting. Krishna's being killed as I laugh. And then when they are suffering and having seen that, then I will kill them. I will kill all the lamenting relatives, the Vrishnis, the Bhojas, the Dasaharas. I will also kill my old father, Ugrasena, who is greedy for my kingdom that I stole from him and put him in jail. We laugh at him. I also think like this sometimes when someone has done something, off with his head. There have been psychological experiments when they just have people acting as wardens in prison and they give them assignments and they have college students, their college students, and the college students acting as prisoners. And you're put in a certain situation and Kamsa comes out. And these wardens were asked by the psychological experimenters to torture the prisoners and bring up the electrical currents. And there actually were no electrical currents, but the wardens, the people playing as wardens, didn't know it. But in that situation, Kamsa came out and they tried to torture them, and the students who were on the other side were play acting, and they were told to make believe you're getting shocked, but the people were doing so much so they had some intelligent Mataji couldn't tolerate it anymore, and she stopped the experiment because in certain situations people are capable of doing anything even though they would never think that they would do such a thing. So we can laugh at Kamsa, but when Kamsa comes out in us, we should not laugh. We should really recognize him and take shelter of Krishna in a very humble way. So I will kill my father Ugrasena, who is greedy for my kingdom. I will kill his brother Devaka and all my other enemies as well. And then, my friend, this earth will be free of thorns. And then he does like every good diplomat. And my other relatives, here's my friends. We've gotten rid of all the bad ones. And my dear friend Jarasandha Dvidvid, who was solid well-wishers of mine, as a Sambara, Naraka, and Bana, he's conquered them all, practically speaking. I will use them all to kill off those kings who are allied with the demigods, and then I will rule the earth. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur indicates that Kamsa is saying to Akura, and I will give you a big part of the kingdom too, don't worry. Now that you understand my intentions, please go at once and bring Krishna and Balaram to watch the bow sacrifice and see the opulence of the Yadu's capital. But he's absorbed. He's absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. Accept Kamsa's absorption as one of the examples that he did it, but don't accept his attitude. And Akura has to reply to this. Now, what is he going to say? What is he going to say? He wants, you'll see what he's going to say, won't you? O king, and he is a diplomat too. You have expertly devised a process to free yourself of misfortune. He would not say, you have expertly devised a process to kill Krishna and Balaram. But he said, your plan is to remove your misfortune. Still, he's giving him subtly warnings. Still, one should be equal in success and failure, since it is certainly Daiva, destiny, that produces the results of one's work. You have made such a plan. Each point is constructed in such a careful way. But your plan making is not sufficient to bring the result. We have to work, but our work is not sufficient. It is necessary, perhaps, but it is not sufficient to bring the result. Ultimately, everything is in Krishna's hands. Akura doesn't want to feel to for Kamsa not to think he's enthusiastic to go, because he is enthusiastic to go, because he wants to see Krishna. And the first thing he's going to do when he sees Krishna and Balaram, practically speaking, he's going to tell him what Kamsa's plans are. He plans to bring you and kill you. And Krishna and Balaram simply laugh. And he knows that rather than Krishna and Balaram, Akura knows that rather than Krishna and Balaram are being killed, his mission is to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura to kill evil King Kamsa. And the last verse that he quotes, and then this one final verse. An ordinary person is determined to act out of his desires. So this preaching on both these ways, in both these verses, are very much also addressed to us. And the part of us that may sometimes perhaps not be so surrendered to Krishna. As an ordinary person is determined to act on his desires, even with fate, when fate prevents their fulfillment, therefore, because of that, he encounters both happiness and distress. So he's subtly telling him that this is the case, and despite that, I will execute your order. He says this very soberly, and inside his heart is jumping up and down with glee. Because on the next day, on the Dwadasi, he is going to see Krishna. He is going to see Krishna, who he's been meditating upon. For he's a devotee, a great devotee, not a devotee on the level of the Brijbasis, but a great devotee who every day is worshiping and thinking about Krishna and wondering, when will I go to see Krishna? And then in the final verse that we will speak about, in the final verse in the chapter, Sukadev Goswami says, having thus instructed Akura, King Kamsa dismissed his ministers. He sent them all home and he retired to his quarters, and Akura returned home. He was instructed to go immediately, and our acharyas explain that some say that he took the chariot in the dark and went home because Kamsa didn't want him to pick up the chariot early in the morning, because then when people might suspect something when they see Kamsa's chariot being driven by Akura and going towards Mathura. He took it home, and because it was Ekadasi, he chanted Krishna's names all night. And then before the sun rose the next day, forgetting in his ecstasy that he was going to see Krishna, he didn't even break his Ekadasi Vrata. He left early in the morning. And some other acharyas say that he left that very moment but waited outside of Mathura. And then early in the next morning, because he wanted to see Krishna at a special time, when the cows were coming home from the pasture, that was his dream, his meditation. I want to see Krishna at that time, herding the cows when they're coming home at that special time when the Brajraj Duli, the dust of Vrindavan, is filling the air. I want to see Krishna and Balaram then. So if I leave early in the morning, I will do so. Okay, we have 10. We have 10 minutes according to my calculation. We'll end at a quarter of. So please take this last 10 minutes to try to chant Krishna's names, turning to Krishna, calling out to him, Govindam Saranam. Yayu, go to Krishna, call out to him, and try to absorb your consciousness in Krishna's holy names. Hare Krishna. Just 10 minutes. Try your best. Okay. Thank you very much. Now it's time for a break. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Gonitai ki jai, Sisi Radha Govinda ki jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktavinda ki jai, Giriraj Govardhan ki jai.